Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Cudsby Vine for January 9th, 2010, our second show of the year, the show that's going on during the Wild Hog Supper. First year we hadn't gone down there to the Wild Hog Supper and broadcasted in about 3 years, but of course if you're anywhere in the southeast, you know the weather has precluded that. But on with me as always, Catherine Smith from Atlanta. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, and from Chattooga County, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, going to have a big show tonight. Going to have State Representative of Mississippi, Warner McBride, who's running for the Transportation Commission in the Northern District of Mississippi. There's a special election which takes place January 11th. He's going to be on with us early in the show to discuss his candidacy and his background serving in the state legislature. And then from there, we'll discuss some more topics, including the inauguration of governors, I guess, here in Georgia and in Alabama, because I believe they're both coming up and weather's affecting both, as I've seen. A new tax reform commission's recommendations. Buddy Romer wanting to run for president. We'll talk about that in a minute. A new map that's come out to redistrict Georgia, which adds a seat. And, of course, we're going to have to discuss something that happened very sad yesterday in Arizona. I know most people listen to this type of show is familiar, but we'll, you know, of course, give our thoughts on it, even though it wasn't in the South. It's just too important politically for our nation not to discuss. But before we have Representative McBride come on, thought we'd go ahead and talk about former Louisiana Governor Buddy Romer. Is considering a bid to run for president. Now, there's been a laundry list of names of people on the Republican side of the aisle looking to run against President Obama, but I don't know that a lot of people predicted Buddy Romer being one of those. Catherine, what's your thoughts on this?
I think it's hilarious. I mean, he hasn't been governor for, what, 8 years?
At least. I mean, he's before Jindal and before Blanco, at a minimum, and it seems like it's even longer than that.
Yeah. And the last time he ran, he had been a Democrat before that. Then he switched parties and ran as a Republican and was didn't prevail. So I'm not sure, like, is he going to run as a Democrat or a Republican?
Probably as a Republican, because I don't know that a lot of Democrats would get excited about a Buddy Romer inter-primary candidacy.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would go less places than his Republican candidacy would.
But, yeah, I think it's preposterous. But, you know, if he can raise money and get some support, what the heck? It's going to be a big party, I think, in that ticket.
Yeah, and we've talked about this for a while, that the Southern governors, Republican governors, are wanting a candidate of their own. And, of course, Haley Barbour's been mentioned, but then some things have happened that may not happen, make that as plausible. Then, of course, Bobby Jindal has been mentioned for a while, and he's the current governor of Louisiana. I have to think he's still up the pecking order. But, Tim, do you think this is related to the fact that the Republican governors of the South want their own candidate?
You know what I think we should do, to be honest with you? We should start a pool, just a betting pool to see who gets the most votes, Buddy Romer or Herman King. What do you think, guys? I mean, a 1-3 percenter at best. Nobody even knows who this guy is anymore. Now I know people are going to say, well, nobody knew who Jimmy Carter was in 1976. You know what? This is a different time now.
Yeah.
You've got to raise a lot of money. You've got to do it real early. There's already 6 to 8, and I do mean top-notch, serious candidates that are taking up all the money, all the endorsements, all the good help. Unless, you know, sometimes these guys will run as minor candidates, because they want a national stage to share some issues or something. Maybe that's it with this guy. But that's as far as he's going. Him running's ridiculous.
Well, Tim, I'll go ahead and take you up on this before we join our guest on here. I'll take Herman Cain to get more votes than Buddy Romer right
now,
here.
See,
a good
I wanted him. I wanted him. That was my idea.
Oh, you want Herman Cain. Okay, we'll have to settle this in a little while. But right now we have our featured guest for the evening coming on, State Representative Warner McBride from Mississippi. Representative McBride, welcome to Duvine.
How you doing, David? Glad to be on with you this evening. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you. Even though it's nice snowing and icing over here in Mississippi, we were able to get to a phone, so it's all good.
That's one of the few things we can get to. So, of course, we're all sitting here in Georgia. You're giving us a preview of what we got coming, so it doesn't sound good. Well, we'll try to get our mind off of it, talking about this election you have coming up.
Right.
And it's coming up on Tuesday, but let's go ahead and talk about background and qualifications before we get into how the weather might affect it. Tell us a little about yourself and your qualifications.
Okay. David, I grew up in a civil engineering firm that my family operated for about 50 years in the Batesville area, Panola County, in northwest Mississippi. And so I learned at an early age how to build roads and bridges, and then I went off to college and got a degree in agriculture and engineering, continued to work in that firm. Then I got elected to the Mississippi House of Representatives and currently chair the House Transportation Committee, where I've been responsible for their 3,200 employees that they have around the state, and I've also been responsible for creating, negotiating, balancing that $1 billion budget that they have each year.
Yes, it sounds like a varied background dealing with transportation issues. Well, that kind of leads into my next question. Why did you decide to get in this race at this time?
Well, as you know, recently our Northern District Transportation Commissioner Bill Miner passed away from an unexpected heart attack, and he and I were good friends and worked close together. He was in the state Senate at one time when I was in the House of Representatives, and we represented a lot of the same area. So he and I had become friends, and then he became transportation commissioner, and we continued to work on a lot of issues together. And I wanted to continue on highlighting transportation, particularly to maintain those 50,000 private sector jobs that we have, which are associated with our transportation industry in Mississippi.
Yes. Well, of course, I'm not the only person asking questions. I'm going to pass this thing around, and then I may ask some questions at the end to follow up. But, Tim, your questions for Representative McBride.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing this evening, Tim?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
As you know, this is an era of budget cuts.
Right.
Do you also expect that to happen to the transportation budget in Mississippi?
I don't expect it to happen at this time. Well, transportation in Mississippi is what we call a special fund agency. It's funded through fuel taxes and a lot of other federal programs that are out there. So they pretty much create their own revenue, which sets them aside from most major agencies. So it's a little bit different game for them. Also, in the 2010 legislative session, we were able to passed a piece of legislation that I had worked on for about 3 years and was able to guide through the legislative process. Was a $300 million jobs bill. And that jobs bill allowed for us to rehabilitate or replace about 100 deficient bridges that we have around Mississippi. It added $40 million in infrastructure help for our local governments. There were several funding in there for some economic development projects because transportation and economic development are so closely tied together. So that will kind of help our transportation industry out during 2011 and make some improvements that are vital to the citizens of Mississippi.
Okay. And, you know, you have served as chair of the House Transportation Committee.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that gives you a special insight into the transportation issue that perhaps anyone else running for the position would not have?
Certainly I do, because, again, I've been responsible for making sure that our Department of Transportation have the tools that they need to make sure that we have a safe and viable transportation system. Work closely with their leadership. You know, I'll be able to go into the Capitol and help with budgetary matters as a commissioner. I also have relationships that are needed on the federal level. I've traveled to Washington with leadership of DOT and to obtain federal funding to assist with that. So, you know, I'll be able to go to work on the first day. There's not a learning curve needed for me. I'll be ready on day one. And people of Mississippi or North Mississippi can place transportation in the hands of a proven leader.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much for being on with us tonight, Representative.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for
the weather. I hope the weather tones down by the time it gets to me here in Atlanta, but whatever. I think we're all prepared for it. Everybody got their health
bags. Yeah, get ready. It'll be okay.
I wanted to ask you about your campaign.
Yes,
and I also was wondering, are there four people running?
There's seven of us all together.
Seven. So is this a winner takes all, or is there I don't know what the laws are
in Mississippi, or
do you have to have a runoff?
No, this is a nonpartisan election, and we had a 30-day period with which to qualify, and then we had a 30-day campaign period, and if nobody receives 50 plus one, there would be a runoff 3 weeks later or on February the 1st.
Okay. So are you and how are things going on the ground? Are you organized? Do you have, like, some kind of grassroots mobility? Or what is your – I mean, I imagine since you are already an elected official, you probably have a pretty strong constituency and you're probably just activating them. But what other kinds of things are you doing to assure your prevail on Tuesday?
Okay. Good question. And – so many people after Mr. Minor passed away, and so many people contacted us and encouraged us to enter in this campaign. And, you know, we assembled a campaign team real quickly to begin to look at all the data and decide if this was a campaign suitable for us. And, you know, we decided that it was, and we took that team and began to expand on it in a nonpartisan way. Again, I said it's a nonpartisan election, and we began to expand on our efforts, and we put together a field team to organize. And, you know, I have been in the House since 92 and have been involved in several campaigns. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting enough people to expand what I've been doing in my House district, which is having a field team, a media team, to make sure that we try to cover all the different bases throughout North Mississippi.
And how does it look as far, like, what kind of turnout are you expecting? I imagine if it's anything like Georgia, these special elections and runoffs don't get very much attention, and people turn up for them. Are you expecting a pretty good turnout, or?
No, I think you're right on target. Our turnout's going to be low, and we realize that. And set, we, you know, one of the things that we did also was bring in some people who had experience in special elections like this, and even some during this same time frame, because, you know, it's quite challenging to go through Christmas holidays and New Year's Eve trying to work on a campaign. So we brought in some people who had done some of that in the past as well. And we know the turnout's going to be real low, but, you know, we're working day and night making contacts to make people aware of the race and to encourage them to go vote.
Well, I think that's great. It sounds really good, and I'm going to turn this back over to David.
All right. We'll let you come on over and be a part of it if you'd like to. Just drive on over.
Well, if we could make the drive, but I think we'd be heading into the eye of the storm. Well, I heard about in 2010, just this past legislative session, you helped pass a transportation bill, which created, you know, just bunches of jobs for Mississippi in transportation. Tell us a little about that bill.
Okay, that was the $300 million jobs bill that we had talked about earlier. And, you know, we could see that the need for our transportation infrastructure needed some improvements. And we have, like I say, we had 100 bridges that we had targeted throughout on state highways that we had targeted that need to be rehabilitated or replaced. And first of all, for the safety of our citizens. Secondly, we had areas of our state which, you know, just couldn't move their commerce, and it just really shut down our economic development. So we wanted to address that. We had some local issues. Of course, you know that we attracted a Toyota plant to Mississippi, to Northeast Mississippi, which is going to employ about 2,000 direct jobs and probably that many more indirect jobs. And there was a transportation issue there, too, where they needed a four-lane highway to try to get workers in and get their product in and out. So we worked together with our economic development arm and put $90 million in the legislation to provide for that. We also had a couple of other economic development projects that we put some funding in. And we had a rail project. You know, with the fuel prices increasing like they are, we had a rail line that's been closed for a number of years that we thought we might be able to put in some state matching fund to get some federal funds and reopen this rail line. So another very interesting project. And, you know, transportation is certainly multifaceted and it not only involves highways but rail, water, and air. So, you know, all those modes are very important. So we tried to address most all of those with that $300 million bill, but mainly to protect those 50,000 private sector jobs and try to entice more jobs to Mississippi through economic development. And you've probably seen the surveys like I have that show if someone wants to do an economic development project in your state, the second thing that of most importance to them is the transportation issues. So, you know, we try to address them and stay ahead of the game on those for economic development.
Yes. Now, I was telling Robert Hooks of Mississippi, he came on our show a few weeks ago and told us about your race and others, how there's a fine road that goes across the top end of your state. This was in the 90s when I used it. And just so vastly better than anything in Alabama, to Corinth, and went on to Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
What are some other projects that are going on in the Northern District?
Well, we have that's Highway 72 project that you're talking about, and we have what we call a Vision 21 program, Highway Visions for the 21st Century, and we have five priority projects in that, and we were able to add additional $50 million to that program this year. But we have another highway system that goes across North Mississippi. We don't really have a east-west link in the north. So kind of going from, I guess, Helena or Brinkley, Arkansas, down to Atlanta is where we're trying to get it to. So that's one missing link that we're trying to fill in. And then we have a Highway 15, a Highway 25, and a Highway 45 over the northeast area that we're very interested in and is a priority to us as well.
Yes, well, I just didn't know that Mississippi, in my opinion, on what I saw, was far ahead of the game of the neighboring state, Alabama, in that same part of the state, and I would commend the work you'd already done in the legislature on that. Well, I guess now it comes time to the fact that it's Tuesday's the first election on this, and hopefully for you the only election. if someone's heard you and they want to get involved with your campaign, what are some things they can do?
Well, they can go to warnermcbride.com, and I think we have an excellent website that's been developed there, and they can go to that website, warnermcbride.com, and they can get in touch with our campaign, and we'd love to have them involved, and we look forward to hearing from them. And we're getting just a lot of people every day hitting on that website and coming into our campaign organization, and we're very excited about that.
Yes. Well, Representative McBride, we thank you for joining us on the Kudzu on this busy 2 days before Election Day.
Well, thank you all for allowing me to do that and helping get the word out and reminding everyone of the election and how important it is to go to the polling places on Tuesday.
Yes, well, best of luck on the 11th.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you, sir.
Enjoyed being with y'all tonight. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes. Well, it's good to have Representative McBride because that's one of the most important elections going around the South because there's a few special elections here and there, but a lot of them are just state House districts, state Senate districts, but that's more like a congressional-sized district, if you will. I believe it's very similar in shape to the one that Representative Travis Childers of the Congress represented. So, you know, good that he could come on and tell us about the roads, which sometimes we think about congestion if we live near the Atlanta area, but then if you want to get economic development, you know, your transportation system is one of the, you know, three key legs to that, if you will. Well, let's go ahead and change up gears and get into some of our other topics. And now that we do have a little more time before Will Folks joins us, I thought we might talk a little bit about that map that redstate.com, somebody on Red State that apparently Eric Erickson, the founder of Red State, didn't even know who the guy was, produced a map that gerrymandered districts just in the same manner that Republicans had claimed that Governor Roy Barnes did in 2002. My favorite district had to be the one that went from Augusta, Georgia, on the South Carolina border, all the way over to Albany, just miles short of the Alabama border, and went north to south, I don't know how many hundred of miles, as it was going completely across the state. What were some of your highlights, Catherine?
Well, I'm always amazed when I look at these maps. They seem so unrelated to good representation. You know, they contain all – I mean, of course, you know, Georgia's a very diverse state, and you can't always have, you know, similar requirements for, you know, throughout a district. But seriously, that one that goes all the way across the state like that, that's ridiculous. It just seems contrary to the idea of, you know, electing someone who will represent a region. But I think we've gotten here over many years and many redistricting, much redistricting, and it's just become a political game instead of a way of assuring representation. That's what struck me when I was looking at it.
Yes, I believe the one goal of that was to put Sanford Bishop, John Barrow, and Jim Marshall all in one district.
Yep.
So in this fellow's theory, they'll have to run against each other. Of course, you don't actually have to live in the district that you run in. Just ask Phil Gingrey. And I will say, give kudos to a lot of the Republican bloggers on Peach Pundit. A lot of them came out and called it for what it was worth and said, look, this is not communities of interest. It's no better than what we complained about in 2002. And for those guys that, you know, called it down the line and fair, commendable to you. Tim, what was your thoughts on this map?
Well, you've already touched on why this was drawn to start with, and it was to either get rid of Barrow or Bishop, and that was the only way they could draw this new District 12 that y'all keep talking about. I wish our listeners could see this thing. It started near Savannah, then it snakes northwest and makes all kind of loops and turns through the Macon area and plumb over to the other side of the state, and it's the craziest looking thing that you saw, and it is the kind of thing that the Republicans once took Democrats to task for drawing. How would you even campaign in a district like that? I mean, if you're driving the district, you wouldn't even know sometimes if you were in the district or
not.
Yeah,
exactly.
One thing I noticed that was interesting, when they drew that snaking thing like that, of course, they had to change practically every district in the state in order to do it. And our district up here would be Congressional District 3, and it would be the Northwest Georgia-dominated district. Jeff Mullis, for instance, would love it. But Phil Gingrey would be put over in the new 11th, which would be Cobb and part of Cherokee. But I hate to tell this person that, but I guarantee you one thing that's going to dominate this redistricting is the fact that a lot of the leadership is now from the Gainesville area. They're going to want their own congressman. I believe that new district is going there, don't you, David?
I think, you know, Charlie Harper, who was on the other week, he pointed that out, and I think he pointed out again on his blog, Peach Pundit, calling that out. My favorite district had to be Congressional District 7. My second favorite was Congressional District 7, which took in a big portion of North Gwinnett County, but then just kind of loops up over through Gainesville. Of course, it would have a sitting congressman, the fellow Woodall, that just, you know, was inaugurated this past week. He would then be in that Hall County district, and it goes all the way over to Dalton, and it just rainbows over what would be, I guess, Tom Price's district. So let me get back into this discussion, even though this map is, once again, just communication fodder, nothing that's going to ever see the light of day, I don't believe. But I believe we have joining us running for one of the vice chair of the Democratic Party of Georgia slots, vice chair for county parties, Mr. Will Folks. Welcome, Will.
Welcome, David. Thank you.
Yes, and Will, let me know, are you currently at the Wild Hog Supper?
Right. I just stepped outside just now down here at the Railroad Depot.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we're going to have you on the air a little longer. We're, of course, going to talk about your campaign for VP of County Fairs. But also, since you're at the Wild Hog Supper, you got to give us a report. What's going on down there?
Well, there was a good number of folks down here. There was, of course, a lot of talk about the weather, and snowflakes have already started appearing and some freezing rain south of Tyrone, Peachtree City in southern Georgia. And you've already got some snow flurries already appearing in northern Georgia along Blue Ridge Mountains as well. So that was a concern of some folks. But the event was still good. There was a lot of folks that turned out. Of course, you know, it was leaning more toward the red side than the blue side, a little more than usual. But nonetheless, it was a very good turnout. And people have now started, actually, left. There's probably maybe 100 folks left in the facility right now. But it was filled to capacity probably about an hour ago.
Wow, that's surprising, because I would say in past years when I've been down there, by this point, with good weather, nobody's still there. But with bad weather, you think it'd really clear out. Well, let me ask you a real critical question. Tommy Irvin's been in charge of this event since its inception. I don't know if you've tasted some of Tommy Irvin's barbecue, but if you have, you can compare for us. How does the new Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black's barbecue compare to Tommy's barbecue?
Well, I will say there's no comparison whatsoever. I miss Tommy Irvin's. I saw him and spoke with him probably about 35 minutes ago, and the quality was nowhere near our friend Tommy Irvin's barbecue.
Yeah, so we get your opinion. I tell you what, Will, if you give us any more barbecue feedback, then Bob Herndon will probably sign you up for the Atlanta Barbecue Club. you'll be ready to be a member.
I have judged barbecue up in Memphis in May for 3 years back in the 90s, so I know a little bit about barbecue.
So Bob, and he does listen a good many times, just get a hold of Will. He sounds like he's ready to help you judge barbecue contests and whatnot, Bob. Well, let's get back into this race. Will, tell us about what you think is your qualifications for the VP of County Party Affairs.
Well, thanks, David. Well, the vice chair of county parties needs to be able to communicate with all of county parties effectively. One of the things that I'm hearing as I go around the state talking to state committee members and chairs and vice chairs of different county parties is what they feel is the lack of communication around the state. Now, living in the metro Atlanta area, we do get quite a bit of correspondence, but a lot of correspondence does go out. One thing that I have noticed is that some of the state committee members' lists, some of those individuals are changing. So you have changing state committee members. Others are being replaced or brought on. So there's a little bit of fluidity there in the state committee list. But primarily the person that holds this position, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, as I mentioned, it's across the state, if you're going to mentor and advise county party chairs and county parties, it makes sense that you would have at least been a county party chair. I mean, the successes, and there's been some failures I've had, and I'm not too ashamed to admit that. The successes and failures that I've had as county party chair and a former county party treasurer and a former county party district captain, all those give me quite a bit of what I feel is enough experience along with all the other political things that I've done. And we can go into my political bio in a little bit if you'd like, but I have been working with county party chairs for a long time and county parties for a long time. It's not like running a race it's not like running a political campaign for an individual or an issue. It's going to be hard for someone to advise county party chairs on county party issues if you truly hadn't experienced that, in my opinion. There's a lot of things that a county party chair has to deal with that you wouldn't otherwise know. Now, you do deal with issues and other things when you run for political office, or if you run a campaign for a political office or candidate, or even an issue-based campaign. But if you're going to truly advise county party chairs, I think you need to have lived that life, and for a variety of reasons. One, how do you deal with the culture of your county party, the culture of the county in which you're presiding over, the staff that you have, and how you deal with management issues with staff, how do you deal with candidate recruitment, how do you deal with fundraising, how do you deal with how do you deal with primaries when you have primary battles. There's a lot of things the county party chair has to go through, and it's critical. It's critical that we're at a critical time in the history of the Democratic Party of Georgia, where one has to be able to reach out and build that trust back between the county parties that feel like they have been left behind and the state party, and really work to those efforts. There needs to be more communication. I expanded as county party chair. I expanded our mailing list database from 800 Democrats in Cobb County when I took over as chair to over 18,000 by the time I left chair. So we had a very good, strong, working mailing database. Out of 14 House races in Cobb County, I was able to field 11 with Democrats in those House races. There's a lot of things that you have to do as county party chair that I think transcends over to be able to advise and mentor county parties across the state.
Yes, well, of course, as you know, Will, I'm not on here by myself. I have Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett both on the line with me as well as co-hosts for the show. Catherine, what are some of your questions for Will?
Hey, Will, it's nice to have you on.
Hey, Catherine.
I'm glad you were able to make it to the Wild Hog Supper. I was down there a couple of years ago. It's always fun. My question, my biggest frustration as a state committee member and member of the Democratic Party of Georgia is that in a big picture, I mean, I have a lot of frustrations, but as a member and also an active member of my Fulton County party, is that I feel like there's a lack of cross-pollination, you might say. I think there's county parties across the state that are doing really interesting things. For example, the training that Juliana Ilari did last year for the Cobb County Democrats, that
right.
kind of thing is something that could easily be done in almost every county. And I
right.
think that I bet very few people even know that she did that was done by the Cobb County Democrats. And then I'm sure there's things being done in Valdosta and Savannah that would help other. I feel like we're always reinventing the wheel when I think that there's an opportunity to share information with both failures and successes. And I always come away from my state committee meetings having, you know, sort of stolen a couple minutes at a coffee break or something, talking to someone from South Georgia or North Georgia or West or East or wherever, and learn something. And I always think, gee, it would be really nice if we could do this in a more open way. And I wonder if you have some thoughts about how we might be able to do that.
I agree. And Juliana and I had tried to work on something before I was county party chair, and we couldn't get that off the ground. And when I was elected county party chair of Cobb County 2 years ago, that's the first thing I did is went to Juliana. And Juliana, she had already worked up a variety of different things, a night school and some other things. And even though it was done under my watch and as county party chair, I give full credit to Juliana for putting together that 14-month program that when I was able to expand our database to 18,000, it was actually a little more than that at first. And then Juliana had put together the training program. I had emailed the initial material out and started the conversation about the Cobb County Democratic Party putting together a training program. Would you be interested? We're talking about a long term thing, not something that'd be a couple of weeks, but this is something that was 14 months long. And it would take a considerable amount of time. It was for serious people. We originally got about 80 or 90 people to start off in Juliana's living room doing this training program. My JJ dinner that I hosted this last year for Cobb County, we graduated. I made sure on our program that I formally had degrees of the training program that I handed off to every one of the graduates of this program. And this is programming like where people learn branding, people would learn about campaign finance. This is training and they're not ready to be field candidates for senatorial U.S. congressional races. But these aren't your phone bankers and canvassers. These are the people that have had some training. These are people that have a desire to do and help and spread the word of Democrats and get Democrats elected. And now we have a pool of some educated individuals in Cobb County. You're correct. Part of my platform for the Democratic Party of Georgia as vice chair of county party chairs is to take ideas. It's to take this training program and say, look, this is an example of what we had accomplished in Cobb County. This is an example. This is the documentation the highlight documentation that was used. Is this something that we can translate this to other county parties? Some county parties don't have any kind of training. Some people have county party chairs that are reelected because there's nobody else that knows how to do anything there. But, yes, there's a lot of things going on around the state that can be recycled. And part of the vice chair for county party's position is to make sure that not only does the DPG know what these county parties are doing around the state, but I feel as your vice chair for the DPG for county parties, it's my responsibility to make sure that all the state committee members know what's going on in these counties, what is succeeding, what is failing, where someone needs help, where do kudos need to go out, and how can we leverage the help of different constituency groups and the state committee members. I mean, Kevin, you and I both are state committee members. We're elected for a reason. It should not be just a show up if we can get a quorum two times out of a year in the center of the state of Georgia.
Absolutely.
The state committee can be leveraged. There's people that have not been invited to this table. There's constituency groups that have, I mean, there are people that are busting at the seams to help. Now, I'm not talking about having a room of 800 people in it trying to make strategic decisions for the Democratic Party of Georgia. But everyone needs to realize that there are people with good ideas. They need to be documented so that they know that their voices are heard, and that we need to have, at a minimum, a monthly conference call, at least among districts, and a quarterly conference call or face-to-face by congressional districts. And when we meet biannually or however many times the state committee needs to meet in a year, that we have breakout sessions or face-to-face meetings statewide so that we can take these things that need to be documented, we can take these ideas, we can take the things that are the successes and failures, and not to throw people under the bus or not to give mounds of kudos to somebody, but to say, hey, here are things that are working and not working in the cultures of these different environments around the state, these different county parties. Can this be a benefit to you? And if so, what do we need to do to work together to tweak it, to make it work for you? If we are to do that, I think that one step alone, there's about 15 more, but that one step alone will move county parties forward, in my opinion, in the state of Georgia. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be a 2 or 4 year plan. But we need to lay down a plan that's 1 year, 2 year, 4 year, an 8 year plan. Log it out, chart it out, put up your milestones, start tracking and executing the plan. It's going to be reiterative. You're going to have to revisit it and tweak it as you go along the way. But everybody needs to have buy-in into the plan. Everyone needs to sign off that this is what we need to do across the state, leverage different constituency groups and state committee members around the state to assist, and measure it, monitor it, report on it at a minimum at a quarterly level to all state committee members so that everyone, again, is fully encompassing where we are. And then, what do we need to do to tweak it a little bit to keep on going and do the plan? If you effectively plan out in a strategic plan over a short and long-term period, it's not going to hurt you. You're going to see, mounds of success with that. I'm a senior project manager and deputy director of a project management office. I'm a project manager. I see projects. That's how I view life. That's how I view my family a lot of times. That's how I view things I do. In order to be effective, in order to be an effective leader, you have to lay out a plan, get everybody's buy-in, get all your stakeholders involved, lay it out, get sign off by everybody that this is what we're going to do and we all agree, execute it, monitor it, and control it. And report on it is one of the most important things that's not being done. So that we can, again, not throw people under the bus, but we can say, this is working here. This is not working here. And start that documentation of institutional knowledge that we're so lacking across the state.
Sounds good. Okay, Tim, you got something for us?
I hope I answered your question, Catherine.
Yeah.
Good evening, Will. How you doing?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing very well. Listen, the first question I have for you is kind of a two-parter. With so many leaving party leadership and also the state party office, we're going to end up with essentially an almost brand-new leadership team as well as a new party office. And my question, which is a two-parter, is that a good thing? And the second part of that is, does that have a downside?
Well, one, I think, okay, there's pros and cons to it. I think it is a good thing that you have a clean slate. From the DPG level, having a clean slate in-house gives you a different, unique, fresh look at things. It allows people that have been elected by state committee members around the state to hold state leadership positions and to take a look at things in a new light. It depends on how those leaders take hold of those reins, those new leaders, how they take hold of those reins is what's going to tell the story at the end of the four-year term. In order to be successful, the new party leadership, the Democratic Party of Georgia, no matter who it is, whether it's me or anyone else I'm running against or anybody else for chair, vice chair, whatever, they need to make sure that they are including the voices from different people around the state. We need to get away from just being, you know, the people in rural Georgia think that we're just the urban metro Atlanta Democratic Party of Georgia organization. You know, the party, the state party should be for the entire state, and that's what it should be for. So having new leadership in at the DP, at the state level would benefit from new, fresh ideas, being able to bring people to the table. Part of the downside could be is that there are some people that are long-term supporters of the party, that some of those contacts may get lost during the transition. That's a possibility. I hope that we can keep those contacts going forward, but that's one of the risks you have when you take a look at that, and that's a risk that we have documented, that you have to make sure that we continue the positive relationships that we currently have across the state, the Democratic Party of Georgia. Part of the downside also to having a complete new slate is lack of institutional knowledge. We need to make sure that we capture as much, the transition needs to capture as much knowledge as possible when we transfer leadership between the shifts of the guard, per se. And we need to make sure that, again, the supporters that we currently have that have supported the state party, we need to maintain those relationships, but we also need to bring in new, vibrant relationships that may have, in the past, may have been, I'm not going to say turned away, but may have, because of their ideological differences or their philosophies, grown away from the Democratic Party. So we need to recultivate and then reengage those individuals to try to bring them back into the party. Now, the part about people switching from the left side of the bar to the right side of the bar, it's kind of like if there are individuals that were going to hold us down, it may be a good thing to purge some of that deadwood now. There's different schools of thought on that. You may be doing a service by getting those people off, because for me, if a person is elected by holding or allegedly holding their party's values and adhering to their platform when they run for office, and then within 45 days of the election, you switch to the other side. To me, I see no political gain for that party whatsoever that they're leaving. I see personal power is all I see when I look at their face. And that's something that we need to try to hold accountable, a little more accountable, and try to talk about and have the conversation about how can we control that a little bit better. And if people still do that or want to do that, what can we do, what ramifications can we install to come back to those individuals that do that. So to your question to him about good or bad thing with new people in office at the VPG, it's both sides. Institutional knowledge is one. I'm hoping we don't lose some of that institutional knowledge, but I believe it's a very good thing to have a fresh set of eyes looking at things and say, okay, from what we know, this hasn't worked in the past. What are things we need to work on? And taking those and fielding those ideas and suggestions that are all around the entire state, from Valdosta up to Dillard and Clayton, Georgia, over to Rome, everywhere. There are ideas and suggestions all around the state, not just what's in Cobb, Gwinnett, DeKalb, or Fulton.
Okay. Thank you, sir. David? Yes, well, Will, we look forward to thank you for coming on the show and look forward to hearing more from you, I guess, between now and Election Day, which will be January 29th. I know you'll be contacting folks individually.
Yep.
They're on the state committee, and, of course, I guess you'll get a little time to speak that day during the election in Warner Robins.
Yes, sir. I believe I'll get a couple of minutes to do that.
Yeah, well, let's get headed home from the Wild Hog Supper safely, because I guess if you go get on the road now, you'll kind of beat the impending weather.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm just about 35 minutes away from the Capitol, so I'm hoping that I'll be able to get home before some of the serious stuff starts happening. But I understand that there's some things already happening around the state, and right now as I look out my window, I'm down here in the parking lot here across at the Capitol, and as I look out my window, it looks like the bottom is about to fall out any minute, and the wind's kind of rolling pretty well here.
Yeah, well, let's get
and
out
as
of
a matter
here.
Of
Thanks
fact,
again.
As a matter of fact, it's snowing right now. It just starts snowing.
Okay.
You be safe, sir.
All right. Thank you all. And David and Tim, thank you very much. And Catherine, a pleasure to talk to you again. And and I hope everyone stays warm. Stays warm the next day or so.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I tell you, we don't have a ton of time left, but one thing I kind of thought we would talk about was the recommendations from the tax panel. Basically, a few years ago, and I don't know when this panel was originally constructed, it was to look at the tax councils, to look at how Georgia could change their tax system, and I guess they wanted to institute more fairness in it. Now, fairness is a very subjective word, I guess you'd say. And they've come up with some recommendations, and I'll say some I like, some I don't like so much. Because one thing, honestly, I'm a kind of person, I like progressive taxation, and that means a little income tax in my book. Now, they think that the income tax is a little unfair, so they want to decrease it to 4% from 8. My numbers may be a little off there. Check me if I'm wrong. But that's how they interpret fairness. But they do have some other things. For instance, I thought, you know, like getting rid of some of the sales tax holidays, which I kind of think should be used in some circumstances, and increasing the cigarette tax, different things like that. Tim, what were some of your thoughts, both pro and con, on this tax reform commission?
Well, just about all con, to be honest with you. Now I could understand in this tight era, doing away with a couple of the things that you just mentioned, like the tax holiday or something like that. But pretty much, to me, this was Republican stuff, David. You cut income and corporate taxes, and you raise sales taxes and tax services as well. It's a simple premise, help the rich and hurt the rest. I don't see much that I like, and I see plenty that I don't. And taxing casual sales, I mean, I want to sell you a car, they want to tax that. Oh, come on.
I wonder if they even think that'll be, I wonder if they even think that people will even turn that in.
How are they going to even police that?
Now, I will say this. Now, are used cars from dealerships, are those currently taxed? Those are currently taxed. So this would only be private party sales.
Yeah, this is a casual sale.
Yes, and then, of course, you know, in the Glenn tax, one thing that was very unpopular that they bring back up is taxation on services, which one, a lot of these, you know, heating and air conditioning folks and plumbers,
I mean, they're just not set up to charge sales tax. It'd be something new that they would have to figure out how to incorporate into their business, and they're not going to want to do that. And two, a lot of times when you call for services, it's not you upgrading something. It's just you simply getting your heating fixed. It's getting your pipes cleared where you can function with some running water, and putting taxes on that at that point is pretty burdensome. You know, the food sales tax thing is just very regrettable, one of the most things. So, I mean, when I look down the whole list, I see more cons than pros, too. I just try to be a little nice mentioning, you know, the two of the places that I saw weren't all bad, if you will. Catherine, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, I have no problem with increasing cigarette tax. I think that's good. I mean, they should tax the hell out of it. I say that as a smoker. But these other ones, I mean, I was shocked when I moved here 15 years ago that there was tax on groceries. There hasn't been tax on groceries in Michigan for at least 30 years. I shouldn't say that, but it's been a long time. Those are very regressive, and they really hurt the poor. The thing is that, you know, we poor people in general spend all their money. So they're going to be paying taxes on most of the money that they earn and spend. And then rich people generally have more money, so they don't spend all their money. It's just in these times with such terrible budget crunches, I don't think now is the time to add taxes to already burdensome taxation. And I mean, I think lowering these income taxes, I don't know. It doesn't seem very well thought through either. You're absolutely right about plumbers and hair salons and those places. Now, heating and air conditioning, HVAC companies, when you buy an air conditioner, you pay taxes on it, I assume. But you don't
have to pay equipment itself.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have to pay taxes on the services. And it is a huge burden for those businesses who have never had to do anything like that. You know, it's a huge burden. The compliance is no small task. So you're adding, it might be a good jobs program because you're adding, you know, you're adding employees to already stressed companies. But I think it's bad. I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, and make sure, I guess, if this does happen, and that's the next big question, we can let them know where it came from. Well, call on all this. I guess when you talk taxes, people decide to call in, a caller from the 678 area code. Welcome, caller, to the Kudzu Vine.
Hello?
Hello? You're on the Kudzu Vine.
Yeah, so I think the tax system, the proposal is disastrous for middle to small-income people. My name is Christopher Sloan. I'm also a candidate for a DPG race in Warner Robins, and I think this is a key position that county chairs across the state should focus on and mobilize at the local level, because average people in Georgia haven't seen this policy yet and don't understand how this is going to affect them. I mean, it's just, to me, of course, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, but to me, it's one of those rob from the poor, give to the rich opposite schemes that Republicans have been doing for years and years and years. I feel like if you're going to take and tax services like getting your oil change or getting your, what some of the parts that they have, or, you know, haircuts, there's safety deposit boxes, those things cripple lower to middle income people. And it's a regressive tax that, you know, is clearly what we expected with Nathan Deal winning this office and the House going the way it did. But to me, it's a disastrous plan for people who are in the middle of lower classes here in Georgia.
Yes.
You know, the
well,
other
Christopher,
thing, the
you
other
said you were a candidate.
I'm sorry, yes, sir.
Well, I was going to say, Christopher, you said you were a candidate for VP of County Affairs. Is that correct? The same post that Will's seeking, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we're all about the fairness at the Kudzu Vine. We've got a few more minutes. If you wanted to tell us about your qualifications and why you're seeking this post, we'd be glad to give you that form.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm the current chairman of the Troop County Party, which if people don't know what that is, it's in LaGrange, Georgia, where the new Kia plant got built about 6-8 months ago. I'm a graduate of Ashford University in Clinton, Iowa, cum laude, this past year. I'm 29 years old, and I've been involved in my county party for as chairman for the last 6 to 8 months, but I've been an active Democratic volunteer at the grassroots level for about 12 years. And I believe that the key to us in Democratic politics is making sure that we have effective operations and systems in places where there are not any. One of the things I spoke about yesterday when I was in Gwinnett and Cobb counties was that in the second district, I'm sure everyone who's a follower of Democratic politics like me sat up on election night and watched with horror as we thought Sanford Bishop was going to lose his seat. And I found out one of the reasons for that is because there are 19 counties in the second district of Georgia that have no Democratic operations whatsoever. There's no party. There's nobody there trying to help them out. There's nobody at all doing anything. And I think that's a testament to the failure of leadership we've had with some of the people in our offices. And if you get new, fresh leadership in there, like Will was speaking about, that can be turned around. And we have to go to these counties. And if the voters aren't coming to us, then it's as easy as us having to go to them. I was at a meeting yesterday that Brian Thomas, the new House Caucus Chair, spoke about. And that's the same sentiment he shares, that we have to get off our laurels as a party and not, you know, just be safe and feel that there's certain parts of the state we're going to win and that the voters will come back to us. And we have to turn a true grounds-up grassroots effort out to them and let them know why we're the party that can lead them better than the Republicans can. And I feel like that's one of the parts of our platform that needs to be emphasized, is how we are the party of the people. We do care about things like this terrible regressive tax structure. And, you know, train people at the grassroots how to make phone banks and how to just get back to the basics of politics. And to me, as a county chair, that's one of the things that I've seen has gotten lost with the leadership we've had currently at the state level.
Yes, well, Chris, thanks for calling in. I hope you're a listener all the time, and you could share about with the race, and then, of course, your thoughts on this tax council proposal, which that kind of leads into the next question, or the big one. Catherine and Tim, do y'all think there's any chance that this thing or even parts of this thing will get passed into law? Tim?
Parts of it, yeah. I mean, what's going to stop the Republicans from doing it? Let's be honest.
Yes.
They got the numbers.
Yeah, should they want to. Now, I did see something that Speaker of the House, David Ralston, didn't he say not so fast on this, like this year may not be the year to do this? Like he may agree with a lot of it, but in these economic times, it may be too tenuous to, you know, bring a lot of this in. Is that correct?
Oh, did he really say that?
Huh. I thought I read that early in the week.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of thought that, you know, given the situation that this was a different budget time, I think I agree with you that they would probably just do what they wanted to. Now, talking about this, the income tax part of this thing, one thing I've always noticed is when you talk about free agency in sports, it's always real funny. There are two states that always point to, oh, well, you know, so-and-so, if they sign this $100 million contract, you know, they're very likely to go to, say, Miami or Dallas, because there's no state income tax. And I kind of think that's kind of a crazy way people are looking at things, that, you know, hey, this, you know, definitely helps the mega rich, the $100 million contract. He won't have to pay any income tax on it, so it saves him money. To me, is there a clearer example of who this helps than those illustrations you see? Tim, I know you're a sports fan. Have you heard those same things said?
Well, yeah, you know how I feel about it. I've said this is a tax cut for the rich, I think, and it hurts the rest of us. How could it not?
Well, the other part of
yeah.
this that I'm always puzzled by is, so how will this work? So they're going to cut our income tax, and then they're going to start these new taxes. Well, there's going to be a gap between the collection of the, you know, former income tax and the collection of these other taxes. And I think that it's easy to say, oh, yeah, we should do this. It's another thing to figure out how it will work logistically. And I don't think anybody ever thinks about that. Because, you know, it just seems like a logistical nightmare. And I also, it's got to cost more money in terms of the administration. Because you've got to, now you're going to have to have, how are you going to, you know, keep track of these, you know, private sales and and taxing on services. You're going to have to be, you know, out policing hair salons and plumbers to find out, make sure they're paying their taxes. It just seems like a daunting administrative process as well.
Yeah, and Catherine, I think that's a real good point about the when do you phase the new taxes in and then get rid of the old. I do think, and given this economy and the fact that we do have such budget shortfalls, if they were to institute the whole package, they might need to go ahead and collect the new taxes in advance of, you know, sunsetting the other taxes to collect more revenue. Then, of course, the Republicans would be responsible for one of the most massive tax increases in state history. You know, they love to bring those things out. And then, of course, the Tea Party folks might really hit them from the right, if you will. Well,
and we gotta be careful of that these days.
Oh, I know. Well, I think it's been a good Cudsley Vine. I want to thank our guests for coming on. Representative Bride, best of luck on Tuesday in your election for Transportation Commission, and Will Folks, and coming on as a guest for the Wild Hog Supper, and then Chris Sloan calling in as just a caller. Don't know if he listens every week, but I'm glad he called on in and talked with us. Tim?
David, being we're already over anyway, I wanted to say something before we signed off. And I thought we just needed to say something right quick about what happened yesterday. You know, the bullets that flew didn't care if the targets were young or old or Democrat or Republican, as we saw. And it was just a sad day for our country. And I wanted to ask all of our listeners to please pray for the families of those that lost loved ones and those that were wounded.
Yes, thank good
you,
comment, Tim.
Nicely
yeah,
said.
Of course, we plan to get into that, but there's just so many, you know, so much show for not near enough for an hour sometimes. Well, with that in mind, we won't go ahead and have any outro music, and good evening for January 9th on the Cudsley Vine.
Good night.
Good night.